Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8. Lord Krishna shows the universal form. We're getting with text 44. Sadyo nashta smritir gopi. Saropya roham atmajam. Parida sneha kalila. Hridayasid yatapura. Sadhya. After all these philosophical speculations, Mother Jasoda fully surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nashta smriti. Having gotten rid of the memory of seeing the universal form within Krishna's mouth. Gopi, Mother Jasoda, Sa, She, Aropya, seating, Aroham, on the lap, Atmajam, her son, Pravrida, increased, Sneha, by affection, Kalila, affected, Hridaya, the core of her heart, Asit, became situated, Itapura, as she was formerly. Translation of purport by Zivan Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Immediately forgetting Yagamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Jasoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for her transcendental child. Purport. Mother Jasoda regarded the vision of the universal form within Krishna's mouth as an arrangement of Yogamaya like a dream. As one forgets everything after a dream, Mother Jasoda immediately forgot the entire incident. As her natural feelings of affection increased, she decided to herself, "Now let this incident be forgotten. I do not mind. Here is my son. Let me kiss him." Text 45. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Mother Jasoda considered the Supreme Person as her ordinary child. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand him. Vedaischa savara aham eva vedya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami that there are three purposes in the Vedas. One is to understand our relationship with Krishna, sambandha. Another is to act according to that relationship, avideya. And the third is to reach the ultimate goal, prayojana. The word prayojana means necessities. And the ultimate necessity is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Param pumat, prema pumarta mahan. The greatest necessity for a human being is the achievement of love for God, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here we see that Mother Jasoda is on the highest stage of necessity, for she is completely absorbed in love for Krishna. In the beginning, the Vedic purpose is pursued in three ways, trayi, by karmakanda, jnanakanda, and upasanakanda. When one reaches the complete, perfect stage of upasanakanda, one comes to worship Narayan or Lord Vishnu. When Parvati asked Lord Mahadev, Lord Shiva, what is the best method of upasana, or worship, Lord Shiva answered, Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu Vishnur Aradhanam Param. Vishnu Pasana, or Vishnu Aradhana, worship of Lord Vishnu, is the highest stage of perfection, as realized by Devaki. But here Mother Yashoda performs no Upasana, for she has developed transcendental ecstatic love for Krishna. Therefore, her position is better than that of Devaki. In order to show this, Srila Vyasadeva enunciates this verse, Tvaya Chopani Shadibi, etc. When a human being enters into the study of the Vedas to obtain vidya, knowledge, he begins to take part in the human civilization. When he advances further to study the Upanishads and gain Brahma Jnana and personal realization of the Absolute Truth, and then he advances still further to Sankhya Yoga in order to understand the Supreme Controller, who is indicated in the Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Vivan Purusham Shasvatam. When one understands that Purusha, Supreme Controller, to be Paramatma, one is engaged in the method of yoga. Dhyanaya vyastita tadgatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. But Mother Yashoda has surpassed all these stages. She has come to the platform of loving Krishna as her beloved child. Therefore, she is accepted to be on the highest stage of spiritual realization. The Absolute Truth is realized in three features: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti Shabdite. But he is in such ecstasy that he does not care to understand what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, or what is Bhagavan. Bhagavan has personally descended to become her beloved child. Therefore, there is no comparison to Mother Yashoda's good fortune, as declared by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ramya kachit Upasana Radhavadu Vargena Ya Kapita. The Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may be realized in different stages, as the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Ye Yatamam Prapadyante Tams Tataiva Bhajamyaham Mama Vart Manu Vartante Manusha Partha Sarvashaha. As men surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanaprita. One may be a karmi, a jnani, a yogi, and then a bhakti, a prema bhakta, but the ultimate state of realization is prema bhakti, as actually demonstrated by Mother Yashoda. So who can tell me something that was in the purport, in the verse? Who remembers something?
For us, it means that we develop love for Krishna, and this was demonstrated by Madhya Yashoda. And also that Madhya Yashoda surpassed all of these realizations.
Surpassed,
yes, thank you. All these realizations of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, because she was experiencing this intense love for Krishna.
Good, very good. Anyone else remember something? Yes. Well, use the microphone.
Mother Yashoda decided to forget what she seen in her son's mouth and to kiss him.
I don't know if she decided to, but she just forgot. Yes, something. Good. Anything else? So there are three stages. There's karma kanda, jnana kanda, and upasana kanda. And above that is bhakti, pure bhakti. And of course, Prabhupada mentions things here like there's the Upanishads, there's Sankhya, there's Paramatma realization. So the question is, one point is, generally we don't take any of this very seriously. Because if we took it seriously, we'd remember what was said. So we don't take it, but that's normal because we're under the illusory energy and we're just hoping that we get something to eat today for prasadam. So this deep philosophical, you know, Sankhya Yoga. Maybe when we hear the word Sankhya Yoga, we wonder, what does that sound like? It sounds Sankhya Yoga. Sinking yoga or something? And then Upanishad, maybe it doesn't ring but much of a memory within us when we hear about the Upanishads. But actually, these things are valuable for us to understand. First of all, we should understand that everything we're doing is meant to develop a relationship with Krishna, ultimately. A loving relationship to the level of Mother Yashoda. Everything we're doing is supposed to be for that purpose. But because we're not on that level, therefore we have to find out what level we're on and what's the next step from that level. So that eventually we can get to the level of Mother Yashoda. We can't jump to the level of Mother Yashoda, but we can gradually get there, but it takes step by step. And wherever we're on, at whatever level of consciousness we're on now, because Krishna consciousness means simply full consciousness, we can go up or we can go down. As a matter of fact, everyone in the universe can either go up or go down. Unfortunately, people don't know that. Human beings are supposed to know that they have an opportunity to raise their consciousness, and the more they raise their consciousness, the more experience of happiness they get. And the more degraded their happiness becomes, then the less happiness they can experience. Therefore, there's a step-by-step process of raising consciousness available in the Vedas, which is meant for that. And although we're performing sadhana, still, as most of us can experience, the art of focusing one's mind upon Krishna and then giving our love to him is not as easy as it may first seem. The process is simple. Simply, we have to focus our attention on Krishna. Unfortunately, there are many other things we'd like to focus our attention on. And whether we're conscious of it or not, more or less, it's whatever we focus our attention on is usually in service, outside of Krishna consciousness, it's going to be in service to this material body and things in relation to the body. In other words, when we transfer our attention away from Krishna, then automatically we transfer our attention to serving this body, which we take as our deity, as Krishna. In other words, eternally we're servants, eternally we're worshippers. The only question is, what we're going to worship. And unsteady devotional service means that we transfer sometimes our attention to Krishna, especially hopefully during our sadhana, and in the absence of good association, in the absence of being well engaged in devotional service, then our attention may shift to something outside of Krishna, to this body, or things in relation to the body, which means we take other things as supreme, as more important than Krishna. But that's normal because we don't understand how nice Krishna is. That takes experience. We can hear how Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful, and we can see the deity, but the deity will only reveal his beauty to us, or her beauty to us, in proportion to our service attitude. So that takes some time to develop. First of all, we have to understand who we're serving and who we should not be serving. So that takes some mercy coming from Krishna, and that mercy begins by these books we're hearing, this knowledge. So we can understand what the different gradations of our consciousness are. For instance, in Karmakanda, we're simply trying to act dutifully. Although the dutiful activities are inspired, perhaps, by the prospect of getting some greater material happiness, still, there's discipline. And of course, in the Karma Yoga, the idea is that we may be attracted to material happiness, but still, we understand that the ultimate goal is Krishna, not the material happiness. And therefore, knowing that the goal is Krishna, we're not so much attached to the so-called material happiness. And Jnana Yoga means we know that the goal is Krishna, but we take pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna. So that's superior. In other words, we take pleasure when we get realizations. When something clicks, when we understand something more clearly, then we feel satisfied that I'm actually understanding how to work in this material world, at least to get free from suffering. Now, that the highest jnana, Krishna says, when you can actually understand the truth, you'll see that all the Vyantis were part of me, and that they're within me, and that they're mine. In other words, everything we're doing, everything we're thinking about, everything we're understanding, every mood we have, is all in relation to Krishna. Either directly with Krishna, or with his energies, which are not different from him, which are all under his control. So, the highest point of knowledge is to have a loving relationship with Krishna. And that automatically means that we'll have a loving relationship to everyone. And everything below that is different, less gradations of real knowledge. In other words, we become convinced that I have to be very careful in my relationships and my activities. Whatever I'm doing is going to influence my relationships. If I engage in sense gratification, then naturally greed and anger will arise, and anger will be manifested in my relationship with others. We can't have lust and not expect there's going to be some degree of greed and anger also. That's what people want. They want so-called love, which is only lust, but they don't like the anger. Make love, not war. But as soon as there's so-called love, there's going to be fighting. At least subtly. Aggression. There's passive aggression, where you're aggressive, but you don't show it. You want to kill the person, but you want to do it gently. So you don't get criticized. And we think, well, it's subtle, it doesn't really count. But it still covers our consciousness, and therefore we don't understand, we're not conscious of what our actual aim of life should be. So at least here Mother Jasoda is showing the highest aim of life, way beyond perhaps what we're able to experience at the present time. And we may wonder, what is it like? So that's good, we should wonder what it's like. Otherwise, why would we try to... If we wonder what it's like, then we'll do something to experience it. But then we have to find out what I have to do at this present time. And the first thing is I have to become convinced that Krishna is God. Now this seems in dramatic opposite to Mother Jasoda, who didn't know Krishna is God. So maybe I should just forget that Krishna is God and act like he's an ordinary child. Unfortunately, the way we treat ordinary children is not the way we're supposed to treat Krishna. Because the way we treat ordinary children, It's all in relation to our own sense gratification. And the way that Mother Yashoda treats Krishna has nothing to do with our own sense gratification. It's only to gratify Krishna, to make him happy. Of course, that makes her happy, by making Krishna happy. Just like we get happiness by making others happiness, even in the material world. But that happiness is all centered around making myself happy. In other words, we make other people happy with the idea that it will eventually make me happy too. But in the spiritual world, that idea is not there. In spiritual consciousness, it's only to make Krishna happy, even if it makes me so-called unhappy. We can't understand that so easily. We could try to understand it. We're supposed to try to understand it. But in the meantime, we have to understand that as soon as I forget Krishna, for whatever reason, whatever way I remember, then immediately the material nature captures me. And my conception will not be the same as when I'm remembering Krishna. And the impetus for my activities will not be the same either. As soon as we leave, but still, it's arranged in such a way as that it's not that if we forget Krishna, then immediately we fall down to the lowest mode of material nature. Of course, if we're already on the lowest mode of material nature, there's no place to fall. We're already fallen. But even if we're in goodness, if we forget Krishna and fall into goodness without Krishna, that's certainly superior. Although it's not a good idea, because if we keep on falling into goodness, eventually from goodness we'll wind up in passion and then ignorance. Still, we're trying to cultivate goodness, and goodness means, for instance, to be dutiful, karma yoga, at least do our duty, what we're supposed to do. But of course, if we don't know what our duty is, then how are we going to do it? Or if we know what our duty is, but we don't take it seriously. For instance, there are two types of duties. There's swadharma. There's the duty of vana and ashram. For instance, we have designations. Now people think varnashram is some kind of like primeval or primitive way of organizing society where you have superiors. People don't like the idea of superiors nowadays. They have superiors who lord it over everyone else and exploit them. That's what they think varnashram is. But ashram, varnashram is eternal. And varnashram means as soon as we get a body, we get duties along with it. Now, we may not be living in a varnashram system, so none of us can really say we're a real Brahmin, although we may have Brahminical duties, or that we're a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya, or a Shudra, because we're not performing exactly those services. But of course, we do have Brahminical work, which is, worship, for instance, worshiping the deities in a regulated way, or preaching is also Brahminical. They have the two qualities of Satya and Socham, especially in the deity worship, there's Socham, and in preaching there's Satya, giving out the truth. Still, we can't really say we're pure Brahmins. We're not on the level of the four Kumaras, I don't think. You don't? You think you're in the...
Probably not.
We're not Brahman realized in pure goodness. Still, we have to... We're following Vanashram Dharma because we recognize still, because we're half sane, that there are men and women. Unfortunately, the rest of society is forgetting that there is a distinction between a man and a woman. Or that if you're born a man, you might as well accept it. And if you're born as a woman, you might as well accept it and work accordingly. There are duties for men and there's duty for women. Similarly, some people like to talk and explain things. Some people like to organize things. Some people like to accumulate things. And some people like to assist others in whatever they're doing. So that manifestation of anashram is there. But it can only be utilized in this age. The other Swadharma is not Varnashram, but it's the orders of the spiritual master. So that means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. It's either Varnashram or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, or it's Maya. There's no other thing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is also utilizing our propensities. Or whatever, you know. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, even when we don't have the propensity, still we can talk, we can preach. Everyone knows something about Krishna. Everyone has to organize something. At least we have to organize our clothes. Everyone has to accumulate something, or else we'd walk around here naked, which would not be very appreciated. And everyone has to assist. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't get along with anyone. Every time someone asks us to do something, we say, Prabhu, can you pass the salt? Forget it. I'm God. I don't assist to anyone. Everyone has to serve. We're always serving others. So that's there, but at the same time, we have to engage in doing things in such a way as we believe Krishna is God. In other words, we'll utilize whatever we have in the Sankirtan movement. And as much as we do that, Krishna reveals himself. And the material nature steps aside. Krishna Bahu Mukha Bhogavan Chitari Nikantasta Japati Dari Japati Tari. It's just the way the material nature works. As soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, even for a moment, Maya comes and slaps us. And we forget. Until we hear the name of Krishna or we get into good association and we remember, wait a second, I'm in Maya. And then hopefully we even arise within our mind, maybe I should get out of Maya. And the way of doing that is just to engage ourselves in Krishna's service. So therefore in Krishna's service, of course, there's 9 processes of devotional service: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, serving the lotus feet, offering prayers, offering everything to Krishna, acting as a friend. There are 9 processes, and there's 5 potent processes of devotional service. So, while we're engaged in these processes of devotional service, we should see what things are causing me, what conceptions do I have that cause me not to really take what I'm doing seriously, even the process of sadhana bhakti. And one of them is that we don't really believe that Krishna is God or that he owns everything. And therefore we're in anxiety about what's going to happen to us, what happened to us in the past. Therefore we're in anxiety and therefore we don't concentrate because we don't really accept Krishna as God. Or if we try to concentrate accepting Krishna as God, then these other then we'll actually enter into closer to transcendence. So that's good. At least we have our sadhana, we attend, it's dutiful. And then with some knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we may concentrate on the sadhana, whatever sadhana bhakti we're doing. And then, with that knowledge, dutiful activity, we may actually appreciate that Krishna is a nice person. He's lovable. And I'd like to have a loving relationship with him. So therefore we might do it a little bit more joyfully, a little in a different mood than other, I'm just doing it dutifully. We may do it in a happy mood, free from any desire for recognition or nadanam, janam, nisundaram, etc. So we begin with a little humility. I'm just a servant, I'm very small. Then we learn tolerance of others, tolerance for our minds. First of all, we have to learn tolerance of our mind, because our mind can be our best friend or our worst enemy. And if we can tolerate our own minds, then we can tolerate others' minds too. Then we have to learn appreciation, that how nice things actually are. How Krishna is so kind, he's put the sun in the sky. He's so kind, he's giving us prasadam to eat every day. He's giving us our intelligence, how to make progress in devotional service. Krishna is quite kind. It's not that because I'm a nice person, naturally I'm a devotee, because I'm so nice. There's no other reason. Paramatma may be there, but he's just appreciating me. That's all. No, it's actually by his mercy, by the mercy of his representatives, that we're able to perform devotional service and therefore gradually understand that we're not this body and get free from all, and that we're Krishna's servants, get free from all our problems of identifying with something other than being Krishna's servant by their mercy alone. Then with that appreciation, and appreciating how others are also doing the same thing I'm doing, they're also getting Krishna's mercy because they're good souls and appreciate the good qualities they're developing, which are Krishna's qualities, then the result is that we can actually give up our unwanted dhanam, our desire for things that are unwanted, that draw our mind away from Krishna. Then we can actually feel protected by Krishna and dependent upon Krishna. And then actually more and more real love will experience by it. Of course, at any stage, devotional service, priti will be there. As a matter of fact, when we engage in devotional service enthusiastically, that's priti, that's affection or love. But it has to be purified, and then we'll understand the potency of bhakti, of ladini shakti. Maybe Krishna will be merciful and give us some glimpses of it, but then we'll understand what real life is like, what real feeling is like. Glimpses will be there, because at every stage of devotional service, it's always manifest as soon as we become a little sincere in what we're doing, focus our mind for one reason or another, and try to give our love to Krishna, try to give our service to Krishna and his devotees, then something Krishna will reveal to us. As soon as Krishna reveals himself, then we experience real love, because it's natural for the soul to love Krishna. It's spontaneous. Anyhow, there's a lot of technicalities in here, but that's something. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Microphone.
Maya?
Because we want him to. Krishna does whatever we want. Since we want to see what it was, just like if you're a multi-millionaire and you can eat anything, but sometimes you may want to eat some potato chips. So why? Because it's a desire, it's a natural desire. So we can live in the spiritual world happily with Krishna and be blissful, loving eternally. But we wanted to find, we became curious what it would be like to be Krishna for a little while, or Radharani, what it would be like. So then Krishna created this world for us to see what it's like. Anything else? Microphone.
You just mentioned that we perform devotional service, but sometimes our motivation is to just perform bhakti so that I can remain happy. Not to so much. We're giving Krishna some service just to remain happy, not so much to develop.
Well, that's good. There is a happiness in doing that. So that's also good. But real happiness is beyond that. In other words, but that takes the time to develop. But at least we should be convinced that devotional service will make me happier than I was before. In other words, devotional service at least will give us some glimpse of Krishna. Either maybe his form, his qualities, or even Brahman, or the mode of goodness. Devotional service will bring us to a platform that we'll be happier than we were before. And then we'll become interested, you know, what is love like? Eventually. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence, we'll experience. And when our intelligence or our experience reaches that level, then we'll perform devotional service for that reason, out of love. But that takes some time to develop. But we should at least appreciate it. Still, devotional service is happier than anything else in the material world. And therefore, it's auspicious to perform it. Anything else?
Thank you very much for this lecture. I was wondering, where does self-love play the role in the love for Krishna? Because if you can give love to your soul, you cannot give it to Krishna, at least from my point of view.
Well, just like the soul generally is always a servant. Just like right now we're giving love, our love, the soul is giving its love, it's focusing its attention and giving its service to the body, to our gross and subtle bodies, and to other people's gross and subtle bodies. So that love of the soul is also manifested now in service to a body, a material body or other people's bodies. So it's manifest. So but the soul, actually its real love is for Krishna. Now, in the material world, because the body is dead, it doesn't reciprocate, and everyone's body is dead. Therefore, the soul is simply seeking something called sense gratification. The body is demanding, and the soul is getting happiness just by fulfilling the demands. So they don't bother the soul anymore, and the soul experiences some peace. But in spiritual life, when one experiences how the pleasure of Krishna consciousness, the spiritual energy, then there's no need for the soul. Then the soul redirects its loving propensity to Krishna and discovers that Krishna is unlimitedly more attractive, unlimitedly more pleasure to love Krishna than it is to love one's tiny self. So then one gets lost in loving Krishna and forgets about oneself.
Because there is no self, there is only Krishna.
No, there's a self, we're a person. But we'll get more pleasure from loving Krishna than we'll get from loving our tiny selves. Now we're trying to get pleasure from loving ourselves through the material nature, and we're only experiencing ultimately frustration. But when we love Krishna, then there's so much happiness and pleasure just by loving Krishna without any other reason, because Krishna is so lovable, that we'll forget about ourselves. That doesn't mean we'll be infinitely more happy. But our motivation won't be to make ourselves happy, because we'll already be happy loving Krishna. Hwala Grandarashima Bhagavatam Kidai.